Welcome one and all to episode 417 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And this episode, it is our Megadeth albums countdown. We had a bunch of different people vote on this, submitting their top 10 favorite Megadeth albums. And Ed Ferguson joins me to go over these albums. I will say that I was pleasantly surprised that I could not stump Ed.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
These episodes are always fun. It sucks that there weren't more people that could join me. Usually it's my patrons that are the ones that join me for these episodes. That's one of the caveats for joining Patreon for as little as $2 a month. Patreon.com/signalsfrommars. But anyway, yeah, so usually it's 3, 4, 5 people. Anthony Mackie tried to join, but look, there were a lot of people on vacation. Or people that had other commitments and just couldn't make it. And it sucks, but it's life. What can we do? Ed and I still had a great time. It was fun talking to Ed. And his Megadeth knowledge was a lot better than what he let on. I mean, I didn't doubt it, but he was saying, well, you know, there are some albums there that I really wasn't into and this and that. And I think that bringing this up, being part of this episode, I should say, there's probably a further appreciation for a lot of their music. Look, not everything that Megadeth has released is golden by far. There are a lot of turds in there, but that's the same with everyone's catalog. I don't think anyone really, unless you've put out an album or two, can't claim to have put out a dud here or there, or, you know, something that isn't as monumental as other albums. I'm thankful that Megadeth is part of the soundtrack of my life. Every album of theirs always seems to have something that I like. And yes, even albums like Super Collider or Risk even have a track or two that I enjoy. I'm not one of these people that gets hung up on, oh, it can only be Rust in Peace or Peace Sells. Are they as good? I'm not going to sit here and tell you that some of these albums are as good as some of my favorites by the band. But they have albums like United Abominations, for example, that I absolutely love and that I still play tracks off of frequently in 2025. This leans itself back to the argument that everything that a band releases doesn't have to be the greatest thing they've released ever. You can still enjoy it. It can still go in that Megadeth playlist. So hopefully what this show does is it makes you go back and check out the Megadeth catalog, like a lot of people that submitted their lists, and it makes you realize how strong their catalog actually is. Thank you in advance to anyone that listens to this episode, watches the video version, shares it on social media, or decides to join Patreon as a result because you want to be part of the next episode similar to this one. Thank you for any support that you can give me. I started in 2009, back in the Wild West, and in 2025, man, are things different. I'm still trying to have fun. I'm still trying to release episodes that are fun to listen to, and people still seem to enjoy what I'm doing. So I'll keep going as long as it makes sense and as long as you guys continue to follow and want me to do so. If you want to support the show, just go to signalsfrommars.com. You can find merch, social media, ways that you can, you know, throw some money my way. If you are so inclined, in any event, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Here we go. Welcome one and all to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. Joining me today for our Megadeth discussion is Ed Ferguson in Kentucky. Ed, how are you?
Doing good, sir. Thank you.
Excellent. And we have Anthony popping in and out. He's on vacation in Portugal. And we've got Edgar Winterson in the chat. Thank you for joining us, Edgar. And tonight's episode is a Megadeth albums countdown. Had a fairly good turnout. Had every Megadeth album and even an EP voted for by quite a few people. So
that's cool to hear.
Yeah. So in total, there's 17 entries here, and I'm going to quickly go over 17 through 11, and then we'll take our time to dissect the rest. So at 17, we have Super Collider. At 16, The World Needs a Hero, which is the first tour where I actually saw them. Actually, I saw them on the Maximum Rocks tour, and I'd gotten tickets for that because Anthrax was playing. It was Motley Crue, Megadeth, and Anthrax. And by the time the tour got around to where I was at, they'd kicked Anthrax off the tour because they weren't making enough money. So the way to solve that was not paying Anthrax. Basically,
did that tour have Al Petrelli and DeGrasso?
Or do yes, you remember? It did. Yes,
so they
yes,
went on
yes.
tour with them. Yeah,
and it was before The World Needs a Hero, because they played Kill the King. And they also played Return to the Hangar live. Sorry, I remember that. And then I don't remember if they played Dread the Fugitive Mind or not. Actually, they were on tour for a greatest hits called Capital Punishment.
I have that.
Yeah, and then A World Needs a Hero, or The World Needs a Hero, came out after that with the two bonus tracks, or the two unreleased tracks that weren't on that album. There's stuff off of that that I still enjoy. Enjoy more than some of the other albums that came out after. But, I mean, it's interesting because I think when you jumped on with the band, influences yeah. where somebody voted for an album here, and
yeah,
also
like Metallica, yeah,
yeah, and I'm guessing that, you know, with some of the later albums, depending on how much time you've spent with them, because I think that there are some albums, some later albums that get voted for. And then there are some that are kind of in between that a lot of people voted for as well. So it all goes in cycles.
You know, I don't care for this album, but it's kind of cool that you got to see that version of Megadeth. Yeah. That was a very short lived version. So that's something you can say that you saw that a lot of people didn't.
Yep. Yeah. And that was the one Motley Crue tour with Samantha Maloney on drums as well. So all around, it was kind of a weird lineup there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, both Petrelli and DeGrasso were great players. And DeGrasso left Suicidal Tendencies to join Megadeth because he had played with Dave and MD45, which was a side project that he'd put together with Leaving of Fear. The fourth component was Kelly Lemieux. I forget what band he had played in, and he'd played in a bunch of other like death metal bands after that. But anyway, Want to say hello to Tony, who is in the chat. Tony Espin, thank you for joining us tonight. All right, so moving on here at 15. This is possibly my least favorite album, but a few people voted for this one. It's Risk. So
yeah, that should have been at 17. I don't know if you saw me give a face when you said Super Collider. I can't believe that people think Super Collider is worse than Risk. That's kind of strange.
A lot of people dislike Super Collider because it's more of, the title track is more straight up hard rock. There's another track on this, on that album called Burn, which I think is pretty good, where Chris Broderick is shredding all over the place. Yeah.
And that album, people seem to judge that whole record by the song Super Collider.
Right.
You know, if he had just put that on a single or something outside of that record, all those other songs are heavy. Some of them are thrash metal. And you got, Chris Broderick doing his work on it. It's an awesome record. And then they also did the cover, didn't they?
I
can't remember the cover. Which one?
Cold Sweat from...
See, that was a great cover, too. Risk. When I was listening to Risk today, my thoughts were how terrible the guitar tones were. I mean, it was everything about it was awful, except for one song, Breadline. He sometimes can write a really good song like Breadline or Super Collider. It's like a great, 70s, 80s sounding hard rock with a good melody. It's not that bad. People are just and I get it. I get pissed off when my bands do stuff like that too, when I'm expecting a thrash metal song. But yeah, I think people get too judgy on that one. And Risk is at the bottom, everyone.
Yeah, Breadline was the single off of that one. The one thing that I really noticed that I think you don't get from other bands is how different the guitar tone is from one album to another with Megadeth.
Yeah, that's something I can talk about a bit along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, Anthony's saying that his connection is better through YouTube. Anthony, I'm guessing that with the video where you're connecting, it just probably isn't allowing you to connect. This has been pretty finicky the last few weeks, even with some of the interviews that I've done, where there's been a lot of like frozen frames and stuff like that. But anyway,
well, everyone type in your thoughts since I'm
yeah,
I'm here. I've got lots to say about Megadeth, so this is a good time to be by myself. But
add some gasoline to Ed's fire there.
That's right.
14 is the album 13 by the band. Mm-hmm. Not one of my favorites. I think this was the one where Ellefson came back, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And I don't know, this album left me kind of indifferent. Like, it's okay. It has some cool tracks on it.
Exactly.
But it, like, a lot of it is just, it's kind of blah.
Yeah, it feels like a bunch of miscellaneous tracks.
I think they came out of... And the other thing, too, is that, like, they had Black Swan on this, which was a B-side to United Abominations. And
that's right.
That on United Abominations wasn't bad. Was actually a decent song. And here they kind of slow it down, and it's just different. And New World Order, I think, was a leftover of something that they had done with the Rust in Peace lineup, because the credits have Nick Menza on lyrics, and it has Marty Friedman on for music. So again, that kind of lends itself to what you're saying, that it that it's a collection of just loose tracks.
Except it starts off great, though. Sudden Death, awesome tune.
Yeah.
Like, that would be on your best of Megadeth list, that tune there. And that's the one that ended up in the guitar game, right?
Oh, okay.
I got it. What was that guitar?
Guitar Hero?
Guitar game that was so popular back then.
Guitar Hero or Rock Band?
Guitar Hero. Guitar Hero. They did Sudden Death for that. That was like the main challenge. And Public Enemy number one's a good song. But yeah, after that, it starts to become kind of... The songs don't flow from one to the next.
Right.
And so it's kind of a disappointment from Endgame, I think. Yeah.
The other thing, too, is it was a weird selection of producers here because they got Johnny Kay, who's most known for working with Disturbed, for example. And from the get-go, when I heard that, I was like, seriously? I mean, that just kind of doesn't fit. You know, yeah. after having worked with some other really good producers.
Maybe that was what the problem was with that one.
Could be.
He didn't have the right people to sound off of.
Yeah.
But, you know, it had Chris Broderick in there.
Yeah.
And, of course, Sean Drover and Elvison. You know, just it's always a treat to sit down and listen to them play anyway.
Trying to figure out what led before this. Yeah, see, okay. So I'll bring up a point that I was just going to mention a little bit later on. All right, so at 13 is the EP Hidden Treasures, which I played the crap out of that when it came out. Because it was, had a bunch of stuff that was floating around that was kind of nowhere else. Well, actually, it wasn't a few different places. I guess No More and Mr. Nice Guy was on the Shocker soundtrack. Breakpoint seems to be on the Super Mario Brothers soundtrack. Go to Hell I had on the Bill and Ted soundtrack. Angry Again is on Last Action Hero. 99 Ways to Die is on the Beavis and Butthead Experience. Then Paranoid is on the Nativity in Black tribute. Diadems, which looks like is on the Demon Knight soundtrack. That's my favorite song off of it. And then last is a Sex Pistols cover, which is Problems. And it looks like the Japanese edition had a bunch of demos on it. Yeah, see? So it has New World Order, which ends up later on 13.
Yeah, see, that's another one.
Mm-hmm. So... interesting. I thought it was cool that a few people voted for the CP.
Yeah.
All right. So at 12 is their latest album, The Sick, The Dying, and The Dead.
No way. That hurts.
That's one that you really liked.
Yeah. It's really high up on my list, and which I was hoping would push it into the top 10 slot. Man, that tune Will Be Back. I still can't get enough of that song. I have to listen to it all the time. I mean, that the other day you were asking what songs get our adrenaline going,
right?
What we listen to when we need something to pick us up. That tune does it every time, and it's become one of my favorite guitar jams too. It's just fun to play. But that whole album's got great tunes, and you know the guitar solos are awesome. It's got good production, the tone. It's just I don't understand why people don't like it more than they do.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a case of people just not checking the album out, maybe, because with a lot of the people that submitted lists, or not a lot, a few kind of went with everything before Risk and then didn't give me like a full 10. There are others that just for like the first 3-4 albums. So there are a lot of people that I think just haven't checked this album out.
It's got a lot of good tunes. Everyone go and sit down and listen to it. You'll be happy you did.
So at 11, we have, and this album, part of the reason why it was better than 13, this is Endgame, is because he had Andy Sneap producing this one. Andy Sneap produced 2 straight albums. So, and I think this album,
you can tell,
which had Yeah. Yeah. Had Broderick on it, had James Lomenzo on bass, had Sean Drover on drums.
Yeah.
I mean, This Day We Fight is a great track. 44 Minutes is a great track. 1320 is a great track. Head Crusher is a really good track as well.
Head Crusher is my favorite tune. That's another great guitar jam right there, because it's got a midsection that gets your head banging.
Yeah.
And this is the album that Chris came on, Megadeth.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is, of course, the album where Dave says, well, he's the best guitarist we've ever had.
Yeah.
Everyone's the greatest.
Yeah.
Until they leave the band.
That's right.
How many members of Megadeth have actually been fired? David Elvson was fired. But think of that. Yeah. With the revolving door that the band has had, mm-hmm. how many people have actually been fired and not quit? Because most have quit the band.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure most people can only handle so much of Dave and need to move on.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, we keep getting good stuff. And that album, to me, that album was exciting to hear, you know, especially because the production was a big step up from the last two records, which I also liked a lot. But, you know, in the early 90s, I started becoming kind of disappointed in their tone, and for a long time didn't like it. But this is when they really came back into a tone that grabs me in, and they kind of built upon that since then, I think.
All right. So we're going to get into the top 10 here. See if we can stump Ed with some of these music samples.
And I'm the only one here to...
You're the only one here. Last time around, Metal Dan was real quick with most of these.
Yeah, where is he at?
Good question. Seems like everyone's on vacation except for us. So, all right, number 10.
Number 10.
That's United Abominations.
You are correct.
That's one of my favorite tracks off of that record, too.
I love this album.
I do, too.
This was my number three, to be honest. Is it number three? Yeah, this was my number three. I don't think that there's a bad track. Well, all right. So towards the end, it gets kind of wishy-washy, but Sleepwalker, Washington's Next, Never Walk Alone, A Call to Arms, United Abominations, Gears of War, Blesser of the Dead, Play for Blood, Atulamon. I can take it or leave it. The problem with that is we have an iPod still in our car. So if it resets itself, the first track to always come on is Atulamon.
Yeah, me too. So, I've heard it 1,000 times now.
Yeah, so it's one of those things. All right.
I like this version, though, a lot with Christina.
Yeah.
She sounded great on it, and I like the way they sped it up some.
Yep.
I think that added to the emotion of the tune and the story being told there.
Yeah, I agree.
But all those songs you mentioned are great. Sleepwalker's another great guitar jam. And I love that. Yeah, Never Walk Alone.
Mm-hmm.
All those tunes. The only thing that I didn't like as much about this record was... Glenn Drover, not that he's not an awesome guitar player,
right,
but his style was the one that fit the least with Dave's style, in my opinion.
Okay.
That when you listen to two going back and forth, the way Al plays is so strikingly different than Dave's that it kind of doesn't sound like Megadeth always.
Okay.
So I wasn't sad when he wasn't on the next record.
He's
still great. And all the songs are great. And the solos are great. I'm not trying to say anything negative about his talent or who he is. Yeah.
Well, he co-wrote Never Walk Alone. Glenn Drover did, actually.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. And then There's they cover Out on Tiles from Led Zeppelin. And I remember when this album came out, Dave said that he was a bigger Jimmy Page fan than he was a Tony Iommi fan. And I remember at the time people were like kind of going apeshit over that, but it kind of makes sense. You know, the way that he plays, it isn't straight up, you know, just chords like Tony Iommi. So I get it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so, I'm glad this one made the top 10.
Yeah, me too. All right.
Number 9.
The System Has Failed.
It is The System Has Failed. That is Pull the Chair. And The System Has Failed came out on September 14th, 2004, was recorded between October 23rd and April 9th. Actually, October 23rd, 2003 and April 9th, 2004. Recorded in a bunch of different places in Nashville and in Tempe, Arizona. It's interesting because this was supposed to be, I guess, a Dave solo album at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of set the tone because I remember at the time, if you look at, for the most part, Megadeth has always had like a lineup that's lasted a few albums where So Far, So Good, So What and The World Needs a Hero were kind of anomalies where you had those lineups for just one album. You either had, you know, the lineup with Gar and Chris Poland last a few albums. Then you had obviously the Rust in Peace lineup last quite a few albums. Mm-hmm. And then this happens and it's a completely different band.
Yes.
And a lot of people at the time didn't they didn't get the album because it didn't have Ellefson and some of the other people that were, you know, known for being in Megadeth. But I mean, you had Chris Poland on a few tracks. You also had, you know, for the most part, kind of an all-star lineup here because you had Jimmy Lee Sloas on bass. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who was a big time sessions musician, and Vinny Caliuta. Same thing. David has talked in interviews about the fact that he wanted to work with Vinny for the longest time, but kind of couldn't figure out how to make him fit in Megadeth because ultimately he's more known for jazz fusion and stuff like that. But Dave felt that he was a monster player that he wanted to integrate somehow. So,
Well, it worked out great. For me, I was so happy when I heard this record because, you know, I had given up on Megadeth through the 90s, early 2000s. But I went and bought this record as soon as I heard that Chris Poland was playing guitar on this one, which, you know, what a great matchup, I guess, with Vinny, I think. And Chris Poland is my favorite player to be playing with Mustaine as far as how their styles fit together. And yeah, to have that cast of characters and then to put on that record and to hear the Megadeth thrash metal sound again, right off the bat with the first song. I was so happy. And I was going on a trip to Gatlinburg, Tennessee when I bought it. So I spent that whole trip listening to this album. Blackmail the Universe is probably my favorite tune. That's another great guitar jam. And then I also, being a Christian man, I loved his version of the Psalm 23. That was a cool, heavy version for him to recite that psalm over. And there's been other Christian metal bands that have done versions of that, but I think Dave did the best one I've heard. So I was really happy with this record, especially with Chris Poland, and I'm kind of sorry he couldn't do another record or two with him after this.
Yeah, he played does lead on all tracks except for I Know Jack, Truth Be Told, and The Scorpion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's lots of great thrash metal tunes on that record. That's one that people should revisit if they haven't given it, you know, much attention.
Okay. Let's move on here.
Number 8.
Okay, that's coming off of one of the records I don't listen to. So I'm going to say, we already picked World Needs a Hero.
Yeah.
So it's got to be Cryptic Writings. Yeah.
It is indeed Cryptic Writings, released on June 17th, 1997.
You can tell from the tone of that guitar,
I think. Right. That's one of the things I was alluding to before. I think you can really tell the guitar tones from album to album, kind of place where certain tracks come from.
And I like what I heard on that better than both Euthanasia and Risk. So maybe I should go listen to that record again.
Yeah, all right. So let me give some of the details first and I'll get into it. So this was recorded at a tracking room in Nashville and the castle in Franklin, Tennessee. Was recorded by Dan Huff, who's known for being a real melodic rock player and singer. And he was the lead singer and guitarist of a band called Giant. His brother was the drummer. They just released a new album. He's no longer in the band. He writes a lot of stuff for other artists, and he produces a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the singles off of this track, or off of this album, excuse me, are Trust, Almost Honest, Use the Man, and A Secret Place. And all right, so this is an album that when I got it, it took me a little while to get into it because of the fact that it was so different to everything they had done before, especially those singles, Trust and Almost Honest and A Secret Place. They're heavy songs, but they're kind of depressing songs. Like, they're not to say that Megadeth is happy music, but it's more on the side of being a little darker. So it has some ingredients that you can find like on Euthanasia and on Countdown, but the riffs are darker. They're coming from a different place, is what I'm trying to get at. And I like those. I mean, three of those four singles, but the sample that I used is from the last track, which is FFF, which is the thrashiest thing on here. Vortex is pretty thrashy, and She-Wolf is a track that they've played a lot in concert.
That one and Trust. I'm kind of tired of hearing those. I want them to replace those with a couple thrash metal tunes.
Yeah.
But I understand that's what a lot of people like.
But see, I don't know if it's more so that it's what other people like, or if it's what Dave likes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's probably a lot of it too. Those tunes are probably a break between the tougher songs.
It could
be up on stage, you know, physically.
Yeah, it could be, because I mean, and even let's see, the Disintegrators is a track that I used to listen to quite a bit back in the day. That's a thrashier track as well.
But like, it makes me depressed when I hear Jeremy say that he saw Megadeth a couple times and was bored as hell both times. And I just keep thinking, man, if Dave would let me help him with that playlist a little, like I just mentioned, Jeremy would have a good time.
Yeah, I don't. One of the things that bugs me about them, and they're one of the bands I've seen the most live, but after he came back with The System Has Failed.
Yeah.
they have this kind of dress code where they all look like waiters on stage. They're wearing, you know, button down white shirts.
Yeah.
And black slacks. And it's, you're a thrash band, you know?
Yeah.
Even Metallica to today is still wearing t-shirts and jeans, or even James now is wearing some, like, the pants he's wearing looks more like he should be in a Western than up on stage.
Yeah.
But it still kind of fits more what they're doing than a button down white shirt where I'm waiting for them to come over with a tray and give you an hors d'oeuvre than to bust out some spider cords, you know? So, I think the album, like I said, the album isn't for everybody. I think half of it is really good. There are some tracks that I've never kind of cared for. And I get it. Some of these songs have been on the radio quite a bit. So if those tracks, if you're not into them, you're still not going to get into them now.
But, yeah.
All right. Moving on.
Number 7.
That's Dystopia.
You were scared you weren't going to be getting these.
Yeah, I was.
It is.
Love this record.
All right. So, released on January 22nd, 2016. Recorded between April and July 2015. Was recorded in Leaper's Fork, Tennessee. Recorded by Dave Mustaine and Chris Rakestraw. Singles off of this album are Fatal Illusion, The Threat Is Real, the track you just heard a sample from, Dystopia, and Post-American World. This is the only album to feature Kiko on guitars and Chris Adler from Lamb of God on drums. And there were a few guest appearances on here, but
you mean the only album with Kiko and Chris together, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Chris, it was a good combination, though.
Yeah. Chris plays, I think he might play something on Endgame, if I'm not mistaken.
I can't remember.
But go ahead. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, this is my next favorite of the newer records, you know, besides the Sick, the Dying, the Dead. Great. This one is a good mix of both heavy metal and thrash metal tunes, you know, which Dave seems to do a lot. And it's got a great production. It's getting, you know, it's even better than Endgame and what came before it. Kiko's first album recording with Megadeth, and I was just blown away getting to know Kiko's playing through this record. Love Fatal Illusion. That's a great guitar jam. A couple other tracks that I play a lot, Post-American World. Post-American World has this awesome, just good old fashioned heavy metal, Metallica, Megadeth riff that you listen to and you think, how has nobody else come up with that before? Because it's so simple, but it's so heavy, and it's got a great groovy jug, gets your head banging. And then the one after that, Poisonous Shadows, that's got really fun guitar riff in it and a good melody. All the songs on this record have good melodies. There's nothing to the only thing that I maybe don't care so much for is the Emperor. On a lot of these records, some of the tunes that I end up not caring so much for is when he does those little talking bits over things.
Yeah.
And if Dave, I know you're listening. as you're recording this new record, please, you can discontinue doing that. We don't need that anymore. If you have to do a talking bit, bring somebody else in that doesn't sound as creepy as you do at your age now. I think it'd be better to start doing away with that. But I don't know. He seems to like throwing that into a lot of tunes. And he does that some on this album too. But yeah, this is another record I think that if you've passed it over, you should put it on and listen to again. And if you're a guitar player, I don't know how you can't love songs like Fatal Illusion. It's just, it's fun.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Dave's talking bit as well. When I was looking at United Abominations, when it gets to Americastan, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, he does a big bit in there too.
He does, well, that song's like 7 minutes long, and he talks through like 5 minutes of that song.
Yeah, it's just too much.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, he needs to bring somebody like Christina back in if he needs to do a talking bit, you know. So somebody that makes it interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Number six.
That's tough there. Man. I didn't catch the tone on that one. I can't believe it.
Number six.
I'm wanting to say Euthanasia, but I feel like Euthanasia has a muddier sound than that.
It is Euthanasia.
Oh, okay. All right. Yay. I'm still 100%.
Euthanasia actually has.
So which song was that? You just tracked that off.
That's Elysian Fields. That's the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah. Euthanasia actually.
It might be because of the speaker that I'm listening through.
It's actually one of the knocks when it came out is that it was kind of too polished. That was one of the things. And I think it, some people feel that it was kind of a cleaner version of Countdown. I remember back in the day that some people had said that. Uh-huh. So let's see, this came out November 1st, 1994. Recorded in Phoenix, Arizona. So it's kind of the last one that was recorded in Arizona before he moved things to Nashville.
Yeah.
Singles are Train of Consequence and A Tout Le Monde. But I mean, I listened to this album a ton back in the day, and I played Reckoning Day a lot. Train of Consequence, obviously, Addicted to Chaos. Elysian Fields. Elysian Fields is my favorite track off of the album. And then the track Victory is again, it's a thrashier song where the lyrics of the song are Megadeth song titles.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of ties that all in together. And I remember at the time, as kids, we were like, wait a second, is this Dave signaling that this is the end of the band? Is he kind of, you know, celebrating what they've done before this? And that's why he's naming all those tracks off. But yeah, this album, you're not so much of a fan of, right?
Yeah, they totally lost me with this one.
Okay.
And I was just listening to more and more thrash and death metal bands by this time. And, you know, I had plenty of other things to keep me, to entertain me than this. And and the tone too, this is where I feel like the tone got a little bit worse on Countdown as far as, you know, cause I like that more raw, edgy, you know, in the garage kind of guitar sound, you know, a couple of dudes with Marshall stacks or whatever. Mm-hmm. But on Countdown, it became a little more produced. And on this record, I feel like the jug went away completely to where, I don't know. I didn't hear it at all anymore on the next few records. And it wasn't until The System Has Failed where I kind of started to hear some of that, you know, thrash metal bottom end getting back in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the songs too, every song to me is just kind of a standard, you know, verse, chorus, guitar solo in the song, right, and then do it again. So it's just, you know, especially with me listening to so much, you know, death and thrash metal bands that are just doing so many more interesting things. I mean, just compare this to like Rust in Peace. There's just so much more, especially for a guitar player, so much more interesting things going on. And on albums like Rust in Peace, that it's just, it was euthanasia. I don't know if I even heard anything off of this until several years later, because I just wasn't paying attention at this point. Okay.
Number 5.
Killing is my business, and business is good. 1985, May, I believe, or June, one of those.
We are 5 for 5. Ed was shaking off air that he wasn't going to be getting any of these. But he is correct. Was released in the UK May 14th, 1985, and then June 12th. In the U.S., recorded between December 84, January 85, was recorded in Malibu, California at Indigo Ranch, Crystal Sound Labs, Hollywood, California. Produced by Dave Mustaine and Carrot Fay. And no singles released off of this one.
No.
But yeah, I mean, the controversy for years, besides the Metallica songs per se, the songs that he redid, that, you know, with Mechanix versus Four Horsemen, the Nancy Sinatra cover as well. So this album was always kind of steeped in controversy, and it's been re-released a million times.
Yeah.
With different sounds, with different lyrics, with
different track listings.
Different track listings.
And Sinatra got mad about these boots.
Yeah, so they had to alter the lyrics, and there's bunch of things. And I think that that's kind of turned fans off to this album, because there's so many different versions of it. There's so many different ways that it's been produced and mixed, that I think a lot of people just like the original.
Yeah. It's a tough record to either love or hate, I guess. If you're a thrash metal guy, it's, you know, one that's going to be in your collection, and it's got really good songs. But, you know, by the time records like P-Cells were coming out, which sounded so much better,
right,
sonically, you just weren't picking this one up, and unless you just got sick of, you know, hearing P-Cells and wanting to hear something different.
Right.
I'm talking back in the beginning when those were the only ones to listen to. And then, you know, as time went on, you know, you just kind of listen to this one less and less. I tell you what, though, this is one record that I think the songs are good enough that if they re-recorded some of these, like some bands have done, they would sound pretty cool, if they can do it without losing the energy of the songs. Which I think Megadeth still has quite a bit of that, you know, thrash metal energy. I mean, especially when you listen to them write songs like We'll Be Back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they can keep that same kind of energy and re-record some of these songs, man, I'd love to hear them.
Yeah.
Mechanix, you know, it's not as great as the Four Horsemen, but it's still a cool song to hear as fast as it is.
Right.
And, you know, you turn it up loud on a good home stereo or in the car. And if they did re-record that with some good heavy tones and a good drummer, that'd be a good jam, I think.
Yeah, I think they got the right drummer in place to do it with Dirk. He's a ridiculous drummer.
Hell yeah. Yeah, they sure would.
Yeah.
So, Dave, I know you're listening, so take our advice there.
Listening or watching? Let's see. Next up, we are up to, that was number 5. So,
number 4.
I didn't hear that very much. Dude, I didn't hear it
Number four.
Oh, so that was an acoustic guitar.
Number four.
Yep. It's just one note I'm giving you.
Number four.
It's Risk. No. We already did Risk. Man, that would have to be Countdown to Extinction.
It is Countdown to Extinction. Oh,
man, I almost missed that one. You got me with that one note acoustic guitar there.
That's a Foreclosure of a Dream.
Yeah.
So let's see. This was released July 14th, 1992. Was recorded between January 6th and April 28th, 1992 at the Enterprise in Burbank, California. Produced by Max Norman and Dave Mustaine. Singles off of this album are Symphony of Destruction, Foreclosure of a Dream, Sweating Bullets, and Skin of My Teeth. This album, are you a fan of it at all? I believe you're not, correct?
Yes and no. I felt the same about this one as I did when the Black album came out.
Okay.
Which, you know, something I'd been dealing with for years with all of my hard rock bands from the early 80s, becoming more and more, you know, hair metal. Like, you know, it's like I was going through it all again with thrash metal bands starting to become more mainstream heavy metal. And nothing against that, but that's just not the bands that we grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was checking out at this point, although, you know, songs like Symphony of Destruction are great heavy metal songs, and it's still got the jug in there too. It, you know, it's that sound like you hear in Symphony that disappears as some of the other records come along.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I told you a few months ago that I put this record back on after hearing you talk about it one day and really enjoyed it. And so I've been liking it more as time goes on when it comes up in my playlist. It's got a lot of good songs. I can see why it's a great record. And even though I was disappointed in it, I'm still happy that Megadeth had such great success with it.
Number two album, only didn't get number one due to Billy Ray Cyrus with his achy breaky heart. And I think that's why they kind of followed that trend after this. I think Dave was just hellbent on getting a number one any way he could. But this album, I mean, Skin of My Teeth is a real heavy track. High Speed Dirt, The Closer, Ashes in Your Mouth. I mean, I've listened to this album quite a bit. And I don't know if I put this up against the Black album, I might actually pick this over the Black album. I mean,
yeah, I would too. But any day. Yeah, big time. I'll have this one in my collection, but not the Black album. So you said Billy Ray Cyrus beat him out on this?
Yep.
So that stinks. A Kentucky boy kept my thrash metal idol from being number one. I'm sorry, Dave, about that. That's terrible to hear.
Yeah, it's even in Wikipedia. It says debuted at number two on the Billboard 200 with the first week sales of 128,000 copies. It was prevented from entering the chart at number one because of Billy Ray Cyrus's long chart-topping reign with Some Gave All. The album was acknowledged as the band's commercial breakthrough, and according to author Pete Brown and Harvey P. Newquist, Megadeth reached the heights of popularity and critical acclaim with this particular record. 2 years after its release, it was certified double platinum.
Now, this record was a better fit for Marty Friedman, I think.
You think?
You know, all of these records, yeah, fit Marty Friedman's style more. Like, you know, when I heard Marty Friedman was joining Megadeth, I was skeptical at first. Not that I knew he was. I mean, I knew Marty Friedman was one of the best around, but I was skeptical how his style would fit into Megadeth.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they gave us Rust in Peace, and you can definitely tell a difference, you know, between Poland and Friedman. There's, it's just, you know, Friedman is just a lot more melodic.
Mm-hmm.
He's more for writing solos for heavy metal songs, not so much thrash metal, but they really pull it off really well, even though Rust in Peace is mostly a thrash metal record.
Right.
And then of course, you know, with Tornado of Souls, you know, how legendary that solo is. That's just a good heavy metal song, really. I mean, it's a little bit thrashy, but not totally. But, you know, the songs on this became way less thrash, but it did fit Marty Friedman's style a lot more, which I think is kind of what also helped drag them in that direction. You know, Dave was wanting more success, I guess, in the mainstream world. And with Marty's, with his talent and his style, he was able to capitalize on that for a few records. It seems to me.
Right. Makes sense. You know, I'm not a huge Marty Friedman fan from Cacophony or any of that stuff, but I'm sure you've heard plenty of that music.
Yeah.
So we have all types of predictions in here as to what order is going down here.
I think Edgar is right twice so far. Oh, yeah, he's right three times, I think. Edgar Winters, he's got it right three times.
So let's see if he's right with the next one.
Number three.
That's so far so good, so what? And I think that was the last song on the album, which name, the title track's escaping my memory right now.
Is it the last track? It is the last track. It is Hook.
Hook and Mouth.
Hook and Mouth. Yeah. So this
guitar jam there.
This was released January 19th, 1988, recorded in 87, recorded at Music Grinder in Los Angeles. Producer is Paul Laney and Dave Mustaine. Singles, coincidentally. First single is Hook and Mouth. Second single was their cover of Anarchy in the UK. Third is Mary Jane. And fourth is In My Darkest Hour, which is probably the biggest song off of this.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So Steve Jones did the solo on Anarchy in the UK. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what are your thoughts on this album? I don't know if I've heard you say before.
It's funny because a lot of people voted this one high up. Obviously, it's number three.
And it's got a lot of fans.
Yeah, it's their third album as well. So that goes to show that there were a lot of people that voted that just did their early stuff. There's stuff off of this that I really like, and there's other stuff that just has never done anything for me. Like I love Hook and Mouth. I think the Anarchy in the UK cover is cool. In My Darkest Hour, in a band I was in, we used to jam that song quite a bit. But I can't say that there's really much more off of this that, you know, after Peace Sells, I always felt that this album was kind of a letdown. But there are people that voted this number one. So,
I think it's changed over time. People's feelings about it.
It could be.
And again,
this is an album which had a standalone lineup with Jeff Young and Chuck Beeler. Chuck Beeler was was Gar Samuelson's drum tech.
Mm-hmm.
He knew all the material. not sure where Jeff Young came from, but also Jeff Young, I remember seeing all the promo photos for this, and he kind of looked out of place because he had like, he had the big poofy hair. Yeah.
More dog-like, yeah.
And listen, although Mustaine played thrash, his hair was on the Sunset Strip side of yeah. things. His and Ellefson's, they all had big hair.
Yeah, they did.
Up until about Countdown.
Yeah.
And it changed more so because of grunge, I think, than it did because of, you know, maybe people thinking that they were posers. But anyway, yeah. What do you think of this one?
So, yeah, it was a big disappointment after P-Cells, because that's what you're expecting, something like P-Cells or better.
Right.
But like a lot of those records back then, like even when I first listened to South of Heaven, I didn't know what to think at first because it was so different from Rain and Blood. And not what I was expecting, but also back then, even when you didn't like something that you bought, you kept listening to it for a couple of weeks. And,
yeah,
you know, and if the album is, you know, legitimately good, it starts to grow on you. Right. It's hard to know how to feel about the production of this record. There's ways in which it sounds better than P-Cells, but other mm-hmm. ways in which it doesn't. Like the guitars aren't as cool as they were on P-Cells, but it still somehow has a little better studio production. It still seems to have a lot of that reverb, you know, like their other two records did before. But my favorite guitar jams on this one, Into the Lungs of Hell and Set the World on Fire, those are fun to play. And then, like you said, it's got some great songs like Mary Jane, In My Darkest Hour, Hook and Mouth. All of those are great, even concert songs. And the others are ones that have just kind of grown on me because I listened to them with the rest of the record. But, you know, yeah, Liar and 502, they're just kind of thrown in there, I think. But this album, though, has continued to grow on me. And I think I've noticed, you know, especially with all the communications we can have on the internet now, I see a lot of people even saying this is their favorite record nowadays.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure it's people that, you know, were my age when this came out. I got to see them on this tour too, up in Cincinnati. So that was pretty cool. Got to see them with Warlock open, I think.
Okay.
With Doro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was kind of a nice memory. Although I was disappointed not to be going and seeing, you know, Chris Poland playing guitar.
Right. Okay.
But it did, you know, it kept us, you know, satisfied long enough to get us to Rest in Peace.
Absolutely.
Number two.
That's Devil's Island off at P-Cells, but Who's Buying, from September 19th, 1986.
September 25th, 1986. Close enough.
19th must have been one of the other records.
Yeah. Recorded between February to March 1986 at Music Grinder, Track Record, and Rocksteady in Los Angeles, and Mad Dog in Venice Beach. Recorded by Dave Mustaine and Randy Burns. The singles were Wake Up Dead and P-Cells. And this was my introduction to the band. And it is one of the reasons why I've always told this story, how back in the day in high school, you were either a Megadeth and Anthrax fan or Slayer and Metallica. And I was always, I had heard this. My neighbor had it. We listened to it in his garage. And hearing Wake Up Dead for the first time, I was like, oh shit, what is this?
Me too.
You know, going from listening to Kiss and Quiet Riot and, you know, what else had I listened to up to then? Y&T and I had a compilation that had Black Sabbath doing Trashed and Crocus and Triumph and Rush and Van Halen and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden you hear Wake Up Dead and it's like three different songs. If you really dissect it, it's the main part. Then there's the solo part. And then there's that ending part. And I remember listening to it. It just blew my mind. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
Is the precursor to the breakdown in music, what came out after. And it was mind blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And then going from that to The Conjuring to Peace Sells to Devil's Island, that first side is a perfect album side. Those four tracks, Devil's Island to me is my favorite track off of this. I know it's more of an obscure track, but again, to me, that first side is a perfect album side. And I've listened to it so many times. I love this album. When the reissue came out, which I have the box set behind me here.
Yeah.
I had to pick it up because it's one of my all-time favorite albums. It definitely marked a before and after in the soundtrack of my life. And I had friends that continued listening to a lot of the more radio-friendly stuff. They were more into Def Leppard and stuff like that. And they had gotten into Poison. And, you know, I was listening to some of that stuff as well. But I was going off into the thrash direction. You know, I was heavily into Megadeth and Anthrax and, you know, really into Maiden and really into heavier stuff than what a lot of my friends were listening to. I wasn't into Slayer and I wasn't into Metallica, but I was still listening to this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, for my money, this was like the heaviest thing going around at the time. Mm-hmm. So due to my ignorance, but anyway,
yeah.
Your ideas on Peace Sells.
Yeah, it was a mind-blowing moment for me, too. Of course, I was 16 when this came out. I bought this in October of 86, along with Rain and Blood, and I heard both of those for the first time in my friend's car. We had just started, you know, driving that year. And, it's when I heard the first part of Wake Up Dead, It was like when I heard Black Sabbath for the first time,
mm-hmm.
or I heard Balls to the Wall for the first time. It was just so wickedly cool, different than anything I'd heard. I mean, it was like getting high for the first time. It was so exciting. And as you said, to me, every song on this record is a single besides I Ain't Superstitious.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it just continues on. I love Good Morning Black Friday. I love Bad Omen. Bad Omen has just got one of the greatest, grooviest guitar riffs in it of Megadeth's entire catalog. If you want to try to get good at playing guitar, try to nail that riff. It'll educate the hell out of you. And the way, I Ain't Superstitious. I don't hate it, but I don't skip over it. But I could have used, you know, an original Megadeth tune there to round it out to perfection. The only reason it wouldn't be a 10 out of 10 is that song there, because My Last Words is also another perfect album ending.
Yeah.
And Edgar was right. It was my number one. It's those two records, this and Rest in Peace. It's hard to say which one's better, but because of this being my first time experience with Megadeth and just that sound, it sticks with me more, you know, than Rest in Peace does for that reason. And yeah, I've bought this record over and over again. I've got those new 2011 versions, which are much better than the 2004 remixes, mm-hmm. which I think is your box set there. I think is probably that recording, the 2011, maybe.
Yeah, it has the 2011 and it has the original mix as well.
It's got cool. That's yeah. nice. Yeah.
And it's got the album on CD and on vinyl. I couldn't get the vinyl out and I had to gingerly cut it because the jackets are stuck inside the actual sleeve.
Yeah.
So I had to gingerly slice the jacket open, hoping that I wouldn't destroy it. And it's a white marble finish. It's really cool looking.
Yeah. And also, man, you also have to give such great props to Gar and Chris Poland on this album. I mean, it's just this was a magical moment that'll never be done again. It was just perfect. The way they all gelled together and created that sound. And you know, the guitar solos on this album, every one of them is interesting. I never get bored with any of the guitar solos, as many as there are on this. And when you listen to Dave and Chris going back and forth, I mean, they sound like they grew up playing guitar together.
Mm-hmm.
They were just the way they played added to the just that wicked sound of this entire record, even in the right. guitar solos.
Yeah. It's interesting as well how both Chris and Gar were both more jazz influenced, the two of them.
Yeah.
How they made it work and how so many big players in the rock and metal world come from other forms of music and kind of spice things up because they're not playing things in a standard way. And they're bringing in kind of a different feel to things. And in this album, for example, it's completely memorable.
Yes. This was a magical moment in heavy metal history.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'll never be forgotten.
All right. So number one.
I think we already know.
Number one.
Rest in peace. That was dang, I'm forgetting the title tracks here. That was Take No Prisoners.
It is indeed.
Yeah. One of my favorite guitar jams off of that record.
All right. So this was released September 24th, 1990, recorded between 89 and 90 at Rumbo. Recorders in Canoga Park, California, produced by Dave Mustaine and Mike Klink. And this is the Appetite for Destruction effect, because Appetite for Destruction were both recorded by Mike Klink and at Rumbo Recorders. So I guess it was them once again taking a stab at things to try to get a popular album out there. But so obviously Holy Wars, The Punishment Is Due, Hangar 18, Take No Prisoners, The Five Magics, Poison Was the Cure, Lucretia, Tornado of Souls, Dawn Patrol, and Rest in Peace, Polaris.
It's good stuff, man.
It is. It absolutely is. And interestingly enough, the 2004 version has some demos on it, and Chris Poland plays the leads on those. He plays the leads on Rest in Peace, Polaris, Holy Wars, The Punishment Is Due, and Take No Prisoners. I don't believe that I've heard them, but it interests me enough to want to go back and check them out now.
Yeah. So at what point in your Megadeth catalog did you hear this album?
Oh, right. I listened, the singles I heard right away. I heard Holy Wars. I heard Hangar 18 because there were videos out. Eddie Trunk was playing them on the radio. the local college station, WSOU, was playing all of this stuff.
So did you hear this before Peace Sales?
No.
No, okay.
Not at all. I heard this right when it came out. I heard Peace Sales back in 86.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. Because I remember So Far So Good, So What coming out and remembering the Shocker soundtrack, which had come out before that, which had No More and Mr. Nice Guy on it.
Yeah.
That got some airplay in my area. And I remember them saying how it was an Alice Cooper cover. And Anarchy in the UK being a Sex Pistols cover as well. I remember them saying that. So I remember seeing this, seeing the video for Holy Wars. And even Hangar 18. I remember hearing Hangar 18 at first and not getting it. You know, not getting how the song started out and thinking, sounds like somebody's not playing a right note somewhere in there. What is this? and then once it got to the, and I had the single, I think I sold the single for this, but I had it on CD and I had an edit of it. So I remember I liked the edit more because it didn't have like the solo in the beginning of the song. It just kind of got into like from the original riff to like the main verse riff, which I, once I got there to that main verse riff, that's what kind of sold me on it. But it took me a few listens to kind of get the song. And, yeah. But once I did, and you know, now I have to listen to the whole, you know, not the edited version, because I want to hear the full solos, because the solos are just so grandiose and just so good.
Yeah.
You just want to hear them. I remember the 2004 remixes. I remember a lot of people not liking it.
Yeah, I did not like it. I still don't.
What I like off of that, though, as a drummer, I like that the low end, they increase the low end off of it. So I remember listening to Holy Wars and where he gets towards the end where there's all the double bass. I remember just hearing that and seeing my speakers just going crazy, trying to keep up with that double bass.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is just so awesome. You know, as a drummer, just hearing Nick Menza and all his glory like that. I loved it. So Anthony's saying that the end solo is too long.
So you're saying that you think they got the drums beefed up more on that remix? Because to me, all I can hear is that big bass, and I didn't notice.
Yeah, they increased the entire bottom end, the bass and the bass drums. Nick Menza.
Well, I'll have to listen to that in the car and EQ it so I take out some of Ellis in a little bit and then enjoy that. Yeah, I'll do that since you brought that up so I can enjoy that drum there at the end.
Yeah. Check that out. And so you were skeptical going into this because of Marty Friedman.
Yeah, I would, because I was disappointed, you know, to hear. I take that. I was disappointed when Chris left, especially. I didn't know anything about, you know, Jeff. We didn't hear anything about him until So Far came out. And then when I heard that Marty was going to be in the band, you know, it was just an interesting thought. You just didn't quite get how that was going to work because he was not a thrash metal guitar player. But like I said, it works fine. They did a great job on this record, especially like Holy Wars this is why it's hard to say, you know, which record is better or not, mainly because of that song Holy Wars. It's hard not to say that's the best thrash metal tune ever made, but they did an awesome job with that tune between the two guitar players, because you have Marty who, you know, does some guitar solos in the mid section. And then when they get to the end thrash piece where they just thrash out the rest of the way, you have David doing his own trending solo. And so they're kind of separated in different parts of the song, but the parts they play kind of fit, you know, their character. and who right. And you see that a lot throughout this record. And when you get to songs like Tornado of Souls, you know, you have Dave backing off and letting Marty take care of it, because there's no way he's going to, you know, fit into that tune like Marty can. But man, this album, though, I play this one all the time on guitar. Love to play Holy Wars. Hangar 18, I was kind of like you. It was a little bit too slow for me in the beginning, but over time it grows on me because it is fun to listen to the guitar playing in that one. And that's another song where they do kind of go back and forth playing, but they still did a pretty good job of playing together. Take No Prisoners. Yeah. Man, that song is so fun.
Yeah.
And then I love Lucretia. That's another guitar jam for people trying to learn guitar to try to nail, because it's hard to get the groove down and play that clean. That riff is tough, but it's fun if you get it. And Tornado of Souls, of course, we don't have to say anything about that song. Everybody knows how great it is. The guitar solo, you know, you'll see 100 people on YouTube, you know, showing off how they can nail that guitar solo because it's so iconic.
Right.
And for the way it ends with Rest in Peace and Polaris, all five of those tunes are great guitar jams if you play. The other songs I don't care so much for. And sometimes I will even skip over those, but I still, I mean, you know, just putting it on and listening to it as a whole album, you know, they all fit well together. They flow one song to the next, but you can tell though, how having Marty in here, you can kind of tell a little shift from the thrash metal. Like there was a little bit less thrash metal, I think, on this one. So by the time Countdown came out, that wasn't there, or you could tell that's the direction that they were going.
Right.
But yeah, I understand why this is number one. It's hard not to say it is.
And that's interesting, because a lot of people consider this the best thrash metal album of all time.
Yeah. And that's a good one to have as your favorite.
Yeah. All right. So let's go over the top 10 real quickly here before ending the show. At 10, we had United Abominations. 9, we had The System Has Failed. 8, Cryptic Writings. 7, Dystopia. 6, Euthanasia. 5, Killing Is My Business. 4, Countdown to Extinction. 3, Is So Far So Good So What. 2 is Peace Sells But Who's Buying. And at number 1, it is Rust in Peace. I do want to thank everyone who's joined us tonight. Bunch of people in the chat tonight. We had Anthony Mackey, Edgar Winterson. We had Tony Espin. And there was somebody else that joined us somewhere in the chat, so I apologize. Oh, we had Dr. Sexy. Dr. Sexy joined us. Okay.
That was me doing a little pretend character over here on the other screen.
Oh, was it?
No, I'm kidding. That's a cool name, though, Dr. Sex.
Thinking Ed's got alter egos. So on that note, we will end the show. Want to thank everyone that checked this out live or that has watched the replay. Also want to thank anyone that voted. We will be back with a patron / voting episode. It will probably be voting on some type of a hard rock or metal subgenre. We'll see if we get enough people to choose what we're going to discuss. It'll be fun either way, and that should be probably at the end of August, more than likely, but we'll see how it all shakes out. Ed, thanks for joining me. Was a lot of fun, and you got all the songs. Couldn't
yeah, that was fun.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm glad it was a band like Megadeth that I had plenty of commentary on. And I'm sorry for anybody if I insulted your favorite records. I'm speaking from a thrash metal side here, but it's fun conversation, though.
Absolutely. It was a great conversation. On that note, we will end the show. See you guys next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.